Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome once again to another one of our Theater Baltimore conversations. As I say, maybe some of you won't hear it anymore, but I'll say it again. Baltimore is a great theater town. We just don't know it. And there's lots of theater in the city. I think that's going to rapidly change about our knowing it. One of those theaters in town is the Baltimore Annex Theater. They're about to put on Bertolt Brecht's Three Penny Opera. We'll say that one of the actors in the play is not in the studio with us now, but is actually recording it because she works here, Cricket Aronson, but in the studio are Walker Tourette, who's musical director, Evan Moritz, who is the director of the play Three Penny Opera, Rose Chase, who is Bob and Betty in Three Penny Opera, and Walker, Evan, Rose, welcome. Good to have you with us in the studio.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
So,
excited.
Yeah, I'm excited, too. This is interesting. I haven't seen Three Penny in a long time, but... Now, first of all, tell us about the theater. What is the Baltimore Annex Theater? Who are you? Just who are you?
The Baltimore Annex Theater is a really loose theater company, I guess, that we
loose?
Started. Yeah, loose is a good way to put it. We started three and a half years ago. And the reason we're called the Annex Theater is that we were in the Annex building that was part of the Copycat Complex, which is a where artist warehouse studio live in work space in the Green Mount West neighborhood. And we started doing plays. We first did a play I wrote, then a play. Tim Podgy, who's another sort of company member, if you will, of ours, we did a play he wrote. Then we did a bunch of Hanna-Barbera cartoons as plays for a while. Did Rhinoceros by Ionesco.
Yeah.
We did a version of The Point by Harry Nilsson, the album version, as a play. We did a version of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, the play. Tim Podgy wrote a play of Robin Hood. We did Christopher Marlowe's Dr. Faustus. We toured our company-written version of Beowulf around the eastern half of the United States. Now we're picking up with this next huge...
And over what period of time did you do all this work?
3.5 years.
That's a lot of work in 3.5 years.
Yeah.
Let's talk a bit about Bertolt Brecht and Three Penny Opera. I mean, I think that many people maybe not have heard even of Bertolt Brecht, let alone the Three Penny Opera. Who'd like to grab that one?
Well, as the music director, I'd also like to bring Kurt Weill into the conversation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who is the composer and arranger of all of the music for the show. And part of what makes the show so great is that it's the kind of the greatest fruit of their legendary collaboration together between these two artists. Bertolt Brecht, who is a highly politicized, you know, communist, socialist playwright, and Kurt Weill, who is in his personal life was far less politically motivated, but, you know, one of the last great continental European composers.
Well, I mean, let's talk a bit about who Bertolt Brecht was. I mean, what he stood for, what his plays were. Because he has an incredible history as a playwright, director, activist in his time.
Certainly. Bertolt Brecht began working under Erwin Piscator as a dramaturg. And he worked for the Freiburgsbühne, which is the Free People's Theater early on.
And we're talking about what period of time?
This is in the teens, the 19-teens, roughly. He wrote in that time some really harsh, almost anarchistic plays. Baal is a good example of that. Man Equals Man is another example of that. And then with the rise of Weimar Germany, if you could call it a rise, I guess, in Weimar Germany.
The post-World War I German government that fell apart and gave Adolf Hitler to the world.
Correct. But Weimar Germany was also the center for a great many artists.
Right.
And it was a thriving artistic scene in Berlin. This is the period, the era, when Brecht wrote most of his musicals, as you could say. I mean, they were called operas, but they function as we sort of think of almost a Broadway musical function. And a lot of songs from this opera did become jazz standards. Nina Simone did a version of Blackwater Jenny. Louis Armstrong and Bobby Darin, among many others, covered Mack the Knife. And it has an interesting history of being connected to the United States in the musical people often put it in their reps and companies, and it's a thing that crops up every now and then, the Three Penny Opera. Later, Brecht had to flee Nazi Germany. He was a pretty outspoken communist. He believed that the Bolshevik Revolution should extend to Western Europe. And he was on Hitler's top 10 hit list at one point.
That doesn't mean the top 10 list that you want to listen to, the top 10 list to die.
Yeah,
correct.
Right.
The hits.
The hits.
The hit parades.
The ones we want to hit and get rid of.
Exactly. And so he had to flee Nazi Germany in 1933 at the very rise of it. He fled. And he was gone until 1948. He did come back to Berlin after being involved in the HUAC committee. He was in America.
HUAC. House on American Activities Committee.
Correct. The House on American Activities Committee had a pretty interesting sort of run around with them. He's kind of a comedian in a lot of ways. And during that time of exile, wrote some of his great later works, Mother Courage, The Caucasian Chalk Circle. I think Caucasian Chalk Circle was written in that time. And came back to start the Berliner Ensemble with his wife, Helena Weigel. And that company continues to be in existence today. It was in East Berlin and, in fact, did struggle to stay free of censorship for many years and struggled with the government in East Berlin afterwards. So he's a playwright who's struggled for his outspokenness. His company has suffered for it both in a communist country and in exile. And probably the only time it didn't struggle was when he was in Weimar, Germany. When he wrote these plays. So that's, I guess, a little
history. Yeah, he's, I think, a very important playwright, one of the most important modern playwrights that we've ever had. And Rose, so let's talk a bit about the play itself.
It is fun. It's a very fun play. It has a lot of really driving melodies. I go home every night with a song stuck in my head. There's a lot of just homegrown, dyed-in-the-wool entertainers in Baltimore that don't necessarily make it out into big productions or aren't at, you know, more established theaters. But I think that this production is really going to showcase some personalities and some entertainers that I think are be pretty impressive.
So the play itself, we describe what it's about and what Bertolt Brecht is doing in his Three Penny Opera, like your characters.
My characters, I am Bob the Goon, or actually my name is Bob the Saw, which is a pretty nice name. And I am one of Mac's sort of lackey gang members. And then I am also playing Betty, who is a prostitute in the whorehouse that Mackie favors, Mack the Knife.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, Mack the Knife being the lead character, criminal, and also anti-hero of this musical.
And it's the same Mack the Knife of the song made famous in the modern popular.
Yes, correct. The same Mack the Knife.
How will you be doing Mack the Knife?
The song?
Yeah.
The song occurs in the play twice, and I'm giving it a separate treatment both times. But one of the unusual features of this production of Three Penny Opera is that rather than using the conventional orchestra of various brass instruments, woodwinds, a few, you know, violin and cello parts here and there, this is largely going to be orchestrated with the use of analog synthesizers. So I think it'll be a slightly different Mack the Knife than what people are used to hearing.
Well, how would you describe your Mack the Knife and the other pieces in the play, musically?
Well, it's difficult to pigeonhole. I'm drawing on a lot of different influences. I'm particularly fond of the original recordings of the 1928 Weimar German production. And so in terms of the style of the rhythms and the feeling, that's very much going to be in there, that German cabaret, jazz, early jazz kind of fun-loving and vivacious sound, but that's going to be counterbalanced by some sonic textures from the synthesizers that are, you know, more surprising, sometimes harsh, you know, sometimes rather psychedelic, and it takes it into a different era.
Now, let's give an arc of the play, though. I mean, I think, again, I said many people don't really understand or know Three Penny Opera. I haven't heard it before. You know, people know the names of the things. Oh, Three Penny Opera. I've heard about that.
Well, mm-hmm. One thing that's important in giving an understanding of the arc of the play is that this play, the Three Penny Opera, is actually an adaptation of an earlier play from Victorian London by John Gay called The Beggar's Opera, in which Mac the Knife, the central character, is undeniably what you would call an anti-hero. I mean, he's a villainous criminal, murderer, and arsonist, and his list of crimes extends pretty long. I think in Bertolt Brecht's adaptation of it, I would question whether I would call him an anti-hero, though he remains a criminal with a lot of heinous acts on his rap sheet. He, throughout the entire play, never does anything to offend the sensibilities of the audience, and he's a very charming and lovable romantic figure.
Who has many women?
Yes. Many women.
He has multiple wives. He's a polygamist, and he also, he's supposed to, at one point, flee the city from the police. His one wife is convincing him to flee the city, and it's Thursday night, and he goes to the brothel every Thursday night, and he can't miss an appointment. So that's how he gets caught, is that he must go to the brothel, so he can't actually flee the city. So that's a problem for him.
And what's the tension in the story?
There are, at the top of the play, we don't know anything about Mac's polygamy or his heinous acts. It's simply he's a notorious criminal. Is really all we know, and the song gives us a snapshot. The Mac the Knife song, which is really the prologue of the play, gives us a nice snapshot of that. There are people who own and operate a shop for beggars to get outfits to look more like they're beggars in Victorian London, so that they fit the stereotype better. There are people called the Peachums, Mr. and Mrs. Peacham, who have found a way to extract more money from the rich. They say in the play, bring people to the uncommon situation where they're willing to part with their money. There are only a few major tropes, they believe, that are really, that catch people so much and really make them hurt that they actually part with their money. And they've figured out a science to this and want to exploit it. So when they see someone begging without a license that they give them, they sort of give them a beating, tell them to come to the shop, dress them up better, garnish their wages, but ultimately the theory is that they're getting more money being a beggar by doing so. Well, Mac goes and marries their daughter, Polly. And not only do they think that this is a bad alliance, but it will also smear their name, bring them closer, under closer scrutiny with the authorities is maybe some subtext you could read into that. But at any rate, they want to stop this marriage. Well, in the very next scene, they get married, Mac the Knife and Polly Peachum. And it turns out that the commissioner of police is Mac's old best friend from the army. There's nothing on the record against him. He comes to their wedding. And when the Peachums question their daughter about it later, in a very brutal interrogation, in which they really the mother and father really show their dark side of it. Mr. Peachum resolves that there will be something on the record by the end of the day, and the next scene, all of a sudden, there is. Mac is told by Polly they should flee, go out to the moors, and that's, as I mentioned before, it's Thursday night. So the next scene is at the brothel house. And he walks in and says, "Where's my coffee? It's Thursday night," just like that. So he's in the brothel house. It turns out he was once married to one of the prostitutes there named Jenny. I guess you would say, they say that she was his spouse in the play. So they were once married, even if it wasn't legally. And and she's the one who informs on him. She gets a reward from the Peachums and informs on him. He gets caught and gets sent to jail, where we find out that he has another wife, Lucy Brown, the police commissioner's daughter, and the commissioner knows nothing about this. So both Polly and Lucy Brown discover each other, and in a fit of jealousy, they have this excellent duet song with each other where they are saying how each of the other one makes them laugh and how Mac couldn't possibly marry someone who looked so silly as the other. And Mac essentially chooses Lucy to be his wife at the end of the scene. He says, "Now, Polly, please, let's listen to Lucy here." And so she breaks him out of prison. Lucy helps him break out of prison. But
which is a good choice on his part to choose the commissioner's daughter.
Right,
as the one he's going to.
It's a practical choice. Yeah.
His marriages definitely involve like an elegant mix of strategy and lust.
Correct. Yeah it's exactly.
So in the play, I mean, the subtext here, there's a lot of political.
Yeah,
there's undertones to this play that go all the way through to the end.
Correct.
I mean, this is
machinations, and, definitely.
Right. Yeah, and he. Of course, Mac goes right back to the brothels afterward. But as Jenny says in the play, she says he's at Suki Tawdry's, which is another prostitute. But he came to comfort me because I was so sad. I was crying in my pillow when I thought about how he sold him out. That he came to comfort me and forget the wrong I did to him. And he's at Suki Tawdry's. And ladies, he's comforting her too because she's sad. He's the last gentleman alive. We discovered in our rehearsals that we firmly believe that Mac and Jenny, the prostitute he used to stay with, he may have been the only person he actually really truly loved. That might have been the only actual love romance that was mutual in his in the snapshot of his life we're given in the play. But he gets caught being at this other prostitute's house and goes to death. He gets sentenced to die at death row before the queen gets coronated. And that's where.
The whole play. I mean, the reason this is an interesting play to me. I mean, it's all about the struggles that happen in a country that's falling apart.
Correct. That's.
It's much
very
like
correct.
It feels like America in some ways now.
Yes.
You know, with the Haiti, a lot of stuff going on, but there's also the economy crumbling and nothing functions and.
The prostitutes have a discussion about whether earning power has any power any longer. Which I find is, you know, resonates for me right now. It's like, well, I can earn money, but it doesn't really compare to how much more things cost than they used to. So I think, there's definitely.
But then, of course, they do come to the conclusion that in their particular trade, their that earning they power
always
will be safe.
Have the power.
and you sing it. This is a. I always have a hard time when people play opera, a musical. It's because it has so many other connotations, you know?
You know, I think a lot of people have a hard time with reducing the three-penny opera to one form or another because truly it's a masterpiece of prolonged ambiguity. And the politics in it, you were bringing up the politics in it earlier. I think that scholars have just struggled with this for such a long time because they know Bertolt Brecht was a communist. They know that there's politics in this play, and yet the hero of this play is a sociopath, essentially. And I don't know. It just defies an easy political analysis.
It's not an easy play to perform. It's also not an easy play to act in, perform, or to stage.
I'm finding it very easy, actually.
Are you finding it easy?
I find it very pleasant. I really like Evan's way of directing, uh-huh. And I really like that Walker has such a love of the play and the music, and it is fun. I think there's something really snappy and brash and quick about the way that we're presenting it, and a lot of humor is being emphasized, and I think it's going to be pretty sassy.
A sassy version.
I think it's going to be a sassy version.
I mean, you say it's not easy to perform, but to clarify, I think what makes it not easy to perform is that to stage an effective version of the play, you constantly have to be riding on the edges of this ambiguity. You're sort of sidewinding, roller skating on a razor blade or something.
Yeah, you
like
walk
that
the
is what it's
edge
like
for
yeah.
sure
right.
in making this production successful, because you can't let it fall completely to the realm of a musical, or else you lose the essential bite and harshness that is in the play.
Can you let it fall completely to the realm of a political
correct.
Diatribe,
right.
because then you lose
it's boring and it goes away.
It has this populist quality that in its time, in its original production, 1928, Weimar Germany, hugely popular, smash success, people singing the songs in the streets all the next day. And then when it was revived off-Broadway in New York in the 50s, again, just a stellar success. And then they made an album of it that, you know, most of our parents and grandparents probably have somewhere in their old vinyl collection. It was a very popular album.
My first exposure to Mack the Knife was I had a 45 collection when I was about 6 years old. So I had Elvis, the Beatles, Motown, Willie Nelson, etc. And then I had Mack the Knife, and it was one of my top three, and I would play it over and over. And I think there's a lot of pathos in the music, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of darkness and tension, and the melodies are really, really sensational.
That song, Mack the Knife itself, exactly. It has this darkness while having this peppy jazz mm-hmm. quality mm-hmm. that...
And that's how you do it?
If you don't pay too close attention to it, it might seem like a sort of inane jazz tune. And yet it has this thing where it relentlessly, the melody returns to this one note, an A. We're in the key of C major, and the melody keeps coming back to this A. It insists upon resolving on this note that is not in... the central chord of the song. And I think the writer Alex Ross in his book described it really well as being a pop tune with no exit.
I like that. And also, it's interesting that your company, when I first heard this, is touring this play.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it opens in Baltimore November 11th, but then you're to Philly, New York, Providence, Boston.
Yep.
And down to Richmond.
Yes.
That's pretty wild.
Well, and it's in keeping with how we do our productions typically. One of the interesting things that we've learned about the underground theater community in Baltimore is that in order to achieve, we are always trying to get a wider audience, get a broader audience, and that means, and the way, the tactics change every single time you do it. One is that we want to get a broader audience in terms of age. Our audience tends to be typically younger people. And so we're always trying to have, you know, a representative audience of multiple generations that manifests itself racially. It's always a struggle to have many different people of different ethnicities and different backgrounds come to see the play in one roof under, you know, that's like a dream, like to come to see these plays under everybody from that represents all these different demographics and age ranges come to see the same play under the same roof and have a community experience. But at the same time, it's appealing to people outside the city too. And that's sort of the other tactic of this. It's about extending the run, broadening the audience. The fact that we know there are people that want to see the shows that we do in Baltimore, in Philadelphia, in Providence, in New York, and in Boston and in Richmond is a really interesting thing. I mean, we live in an age where community is not just the people next door, the people down the block, but community is who you blog with.
Right, which can be universal.
Correct.
And this tour you're doing, New York, Philly, Boston, Providence, you're doing it over 4 days. You're like heating each town one night and then packing up and going to the next place.
That'd be crazy.
It's a logistical miracle.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
It's intense. And it's very similar to how we did Fantastic Planet a year and a half ago. It's a lot of work. And
so,
it's required.
So as a theater, it's an interesting way to build an audience. I mean, you have this local audience because you're from the Baltimore Annex Theater, so you're here. But you are building an audience nationwide or different cities by just pulling your work to different places and taking it there, and they get to know who you are, and you build this kind of loyalty among people who come watch your plays.
It's a model that's been used in the world of, you know, rock bands, independent bands
right.
forever. But doing it with independent theater companies is relatively new and exciting.
That's it.
I think also Baltimore has sort of developed maybe a small brand for itself, that there's been several theater companies that have toured out of it that are of this caliber, yeah. This sort of small, independent, starting in a warehouse, starting in an independent space, and then trying out a couple cities, taking it on the road. And it's a low-budget, very, very collaborative endeavor, but it seems to really pay off because you don't get that coverage another way.
I love that. I love this idea. It is like a musical. I mean, it is like a rock band, soul band, kind of just touring from city to city and have their fans jump out. But now this is theater we're talking about, which I think is a really cool way to interesting and different way to do this. So this opens Threepenny Opera, Bertolt Brecht. One of my favorite plays. I love this play. I actually directed this play in the state prison once.
Oh, really?
Many, many years ago.
That sounds great.
That sounds like a long time ago.
How did it go?
Yeah, tell us about
well.
That.
It was good. It was good. It went very well. This was back in 1976.
So yeah. Were there a lot of drag
yeah.
going on in order to play
did,
the females?
We did Shakespeare the same way.
Yeah.
So it was in the same theater company. So we did a lot of Brecht. Brecht was kind of a centerpiece for our work back then. But this is a great play. I just think it's one of my favorite plays, Threepenny Opera. The Baltimore Annex Theater is putting it on. It opens November 11th. It plays 11th, 12th, and 13th, and then the 18th, 19th, and 20th, right?
Right.
At the Autograph Playhouse, which is at 9 West 25th Street. 9 West 25th Street.
25th and Charles.
Yeah, that's the old. Is that the old?
It's the old Showtime. The marquee, I think, still says Showtime.
Yeah. Those
does
were,
it not?
Back in the days, those were the two of the art movie houses.
Correct.
In town.
Mm-hmm. That's
right. That's very cool. So they'll be at the Autograph Playhouse, 9 West 25th Street, and you can go to BaltimoreAnnexTheater.org. That'll be on our website, BaltimoreAnnexTheater.org.
And that's theater for with tickets. An ER.
With an ER, yes. Most people do ER, unless they...
Yeah. Some do RE.
They do. It's,
we're not that kind of people.
No, so, I mean, that's the pretensions. I want to pretend, I mean...
So, color with an OU and theater with an RE.
So Baltimore Annex Theater. It's Baltimore, A-N-N-E-X, theater.org. You can get tickets. It'll be on our website. You can get tickets at the door, I'm sure, right?
Correct.
Autograph Playhouse, November the 11th, Friday night. I will be there Friday night to watch this premiere.
And oh, boy.
I encourage all of my listeners to be there as well and just have a blast with the Baltimore Annex Theater. Good to meet y'all.
Nice to meet you too, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Good luck
thank
with this. It's very cool.
That's
good luck.
Great.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.